Live from the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway, it's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. We're here today at the Parkway Theater, the magnificent new home of the Maryland Film Festival in the heart of Baltimore's Station North Arts and Entertainment District. The 19th annual Maryland Film Festival begins Wednesday. Today, conversations about what this beautifully restored building means for filmmakers, movie lovers, and Charm City itself. I'm joined by Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post, filmmakers Roberto Busso Garcia and Matt Porterfield, Station North Executive Director Elisa Blount-Moorhead, and architect Steve Zigger. Midday from the Parkway. We'll get rolling right after the news. Welcome to a special edition of Midday at the Movies. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. As Monty Python would say, we have a bank holiday crowd here with us this afternoon. We are coming to you today from the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway, an historic theater which has been lovingly and beautifully restored as the new home of the Maryland Film Festival. Every spring, the festival presents its annual assortment of shorts, features, and documentaries from around the world, but movie lovers also count on the festival to present screenings and discussions with filmmakers throughout the year. This wonderful new venue includes three theaters that will be used by filmmakers, film students, and film enthusiasts for screenings and study. The 19th annual Maryland Film Festival gets underway this coming Wednesday night. It runs through Sunday, and today we are getting a sneak peek at the Parkway, and we'll be talking to some of the people involved with the film communities in Baltimore and beyond. We are not taking calls today, but we'd love to hear from you via email or Twitter. Our address is midday@wipr.org, and to send us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So to start things off for us this afternoon, I am pleased to introduce my good friends and Midday's movie mavens, Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, the film critic of the Washington Post. And we are also pleased to be joined by Steve Zigger. He's a partner with Zigger Sneed Architects and the lead architect who designed and oversaw the restoration of the Parkway Theater. Welcome, Steve. So, Jed, let me start with you. For folks listening at home, describe the room we're sitting in. Describe the main theaters as the one of three theaters here in the building. But describe the walls in particular of this theater.
So this theater opened in 1915, which is, just to place it for everybody, the beginning of feature film as we know it. Silent film, of course, Birth of a Nation came out that year. So this is a very rare old building. It had been evolved through many years, through the late 70s, as a movie theater, showing different kinds of movies under different ownerships. And these walls show you that, because there are details in the walls around us that come from 1915. There are paint and different colors and other kinds of details that come from eras that we don't even know exactly which era they might come from. There's a lot of restoration that's going on in this work, in this room, and you will see all of those things under the loving care of Steve Zigger and the construction team Southway, and Evan Morville is our project manager from Seawall.
So Steve Zigger, we've already gotten a few questions, and they all are in the same vein, is it finished yet? Because the walls look like, you know, they have different colors. There's patches of brown and patches of tan and scrapes and stuff like that. So tell us your notion of this, your conception of how to restore this beautiful theater.
Well, as Jed said, this is such an important house for movie going. It was a purpose built as a movie theater in 1915, and went through generations of changes. Because filmmaking is storytelling, we wanted the renovations themselves to tell their own story. And so we had followed four different rules. One is, if it existed and it was in good shape, we left it. If it existed but was in really bad shape, we had to replace it. If it didn't exist, we left it the way it was. And if it was new, it's decidedly new and emphatically new as a contrast to the history here. So we want the moviegoers to experience the full breadth of the history of this amazing place.
So, Anne Hornaday, you got a book coming out in June about how to watch movies.
Yes.
So there's the notion of how to watch movies, but also where you watch movies is really important. What do you think this theater does to the experience of watching a film?
Well, I think it restores a sense of occasion. That is the first word that comes to mind, because as John Waters said a couple of weeks ago at an event here, this isn't the mall. You know, we've become so kind of narcotized, and you know, you're treated almost like cattle. You know, you go in, you buy your ticket, you get your popcorn, your big gulp, you sit, you shrug, it was okay, you leave. And I think just the theatrical nature of the space restores a sense of occasion, and you know, it helps the film be a discrete aesthetic object instead of just another piece of audiovisual noise. And I think that we can go into this a little bit later, but one of the chief functions of this theater, as opposed to some other theaters in town, is that it really will serve a newly emerging type of filmmaker, generation of filmmakers, whose work might be primarily seen on streaming sites like Netflix and Amazon, but who still want their work seen in theaters, maybe for a one-night engagement, where they are there with an actor or a member of the cast or the creative team. And that, again, is restoring that sort of, you know, they're creating senses of occasions around their work, and this supports that.
That's Anne Hornaday. She's the film critic for The Washington Post. She's here with us at the Parkway Theater, the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway Theater. Steve Ziger is the architect behind the design. Jed Dietz, of course, the animator behind this particular project, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Jed, we have a question from a tweet. Will the theater be used as a community space beyond the Maryland Film Festival?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I would say starting with the Maryland Film Festival, actually, which has been a community operation from the beginning. I mean, we couldn't operate without volunteers from the community, without donors from the community. For sure, it starts that way. But I do think what Anne said about movie going, it gets lost a little bit in all the analysis of the business and all that stuff, which is it's the rare art form that brings communities together. And that's been true since 1915, and that will continue. And in addition to just going to movies, you're going to interact with the people who make them. And I include there this tremendously growing youth media culture that we have in Baltimore will gather around this hub, and other places too, but certainly around this hub, the Hopkins and MICA expanded film programs now with graduate programs we'll be talking about a little bit later are already across the street, and we'll use this building on a regular basis for classes and other gathering places. So we'll see movies and connect to the film community here.
I have a question from Joan in the audience here at the Parkway. This is for you, Steve. And for those of you at home, when you come, you'll see what Joan is talking about. But she says, what is the meaning behind the jester at the top of the screen, and why is his mouth open?
I have no idea.
All right, Joan, you have stumped the architect. Congratulations. You've got a chance to move to our grand prize round.
But actually,
clearly stunned by a movie. He was
stunned by a great movie, right? Actually, this theater was modeled after the Strand in London, and I believe that the mask comes from theater references.
Yeah, there was the Strand in New York that had just opened at Thomas Lamb right. Theater, and then the West End
London. Right.
So, Jed, you've been working on this project. Well, it really, since you started the film festival, you had a dream of having a place.
I didn't dream of this.
Well, yeah. But what does having a place for the Maryland Film Festival mean for your organization? Which is to say, I mean, many of us make the decision to quit renting and buy. And you've just done that. I mean, why that decision?
Well, because the demand we were feeling from our audiences for films that don't come to town. I mean, anybody who's been on a tour with me in this building has heard me say this thing, that there are 950 films reviewed every year in the New York Times. About 300 play Baltimore, studio movies or mainstream art at the Charles, which does a great job. And so there's a growing part of the film world is this iceberg below that tip. And it's growing even more because the technology is changing so rapidly. And we needed a place to curate all that. It's hard to find. It's hard to get through everything that's out there and figure out what you want to see. And I think that's what we're good at. So we needed a home, and we looked for one in our home base of Station North, and here it is.
And Anne Hornaday, you go to a lot of festivals. You go to Cannes. You go to Toronto. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been to a lot of movie houses and a lot of places. Mm-hmm. What does this mean in terms of the Maryland Film Festival's place in the panoply of film festivals? There's a film festival in every, mm-hmm. at least one, in every state in the country, you know, and plenty in other places. But what does having this center now mean and bode for the Maryland Film Festival?
Well, I think the Maryland Film Festival already has earned a place of deep respect on the festival circuit. I mean, Miriam Bale, just who's a wonderful, really, really brilliant critic, just tweeted the other day that the Maryland Film Festival is the best film festival in the country. No. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
And a lot of that is because of Jed's and Eric's and the rest of the staff's devotion to filmmakers. I mean, it's a very filmmaker-centric festival. It was started off that way. Some festivals aren't so nice to their filmmakers. I guess Matt might be able to, and the filmmakers here might be able to attest to that. Sometimes it's you know, your fodder. You know, once they get your film, they don't really do a lot of support. But Jed really made it his mission, and I think that translates to the audience experience. When the filmmakers feel honored and cherished, the audience feels like they develop a relationship with these artists, and it's a really special transaction that ensues. And so having kind of a physical space devoted to that relationship, it was there anyway, but I think it kind of reifies it. You know, it elevates it, it makes it concrete, and then it also allows the festival to continue its programming all year long. And I mean, I think that they've been doing these between the screens screenings throughout the year, but I think this will probably, I would imagine, Jed can speak to this, but maybe increase that kind of programming and make it even more visible, and that's a way to grow audiences and just keep the good stuff going.
And Steve, let me give you the last word before we take a little break. Elaine in the audience wants to know what the building looked like before the restoration. What I would like to know is, you know, when you walk into this, you know, place that hadn't been used for years and years and years, how does your brain, you know, embrace what it's gonna look like?
This space just dumbfounded anyone who walked in when we first came in. It was so spectacular in its kind of somewhat decayed state that it always, from the beginning, spoke to us about the wealth of movie history and its place in Baltimore. It's such a thrilling environment to watch movies, and we're really excited about this
wow.
beginning.
Congratulations, Steve. This Thanks. Is a really, really terrific achievement. Steve Zigger from Zigger Snead Architects. When we come back after a break, more with Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday, and a conversation with Elisa Blount Moorhead, the director of the Station North Arts and Entertainment District, as well as Roberto Busso Garcia, a filmmaker and lecturer in the Film Studies Department at Johns Hopkins University. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to a special edition of Midday at the Movies from the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway. We're not taking calls today, but you are welcome to send an email to midday@wipr.org, or you can drop us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us.
Oh, I hate doing that.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And thank you very much. If you've just joined us, I'm Tom Hall. This is a special edition of Midday at the Movies. We're here at the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway, the beautiful new home of the Maryland Film Festival. If you've got a question or a comment, we're not taking calls today, but we will try to get to a few emails and tweets. The email address is midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayTomHall. Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, is here, and now it's my pleasure to introduce Elisa Blount Moorhead. She's the executive director of the Station North Arts and Entertainment District and a founding partner of TNEG, a film production studio that cultivates and advances new black cinema. Elisa, welcome.
Thank you.
And we are also joined by Roberto Busso Garcia. He heads the graduate program in film at Johns Hopkins University. That's a program that will be making use of the Parkway Theater. He's also a screenwriter, a director, and producer. Welcome, Roberto.
Thank you.
So, Elisa, strikes me that this is obviously a wonderful transformative moment for the film community, but it's also potentially a very transformative moment for our city as a whole, and certainly for Station North. So you have this, you know, grand view of what's going on in this neighborhood, which is so different than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. What's your take on what the existence of the Parkway is going to do for Station North?
Yeah, I think Station North, with regard to Station North, the physical asset is kind of obvious. It's stunning. It's a beautiful building. But I think the more important thing that the theater is doing is it's providing a sort of reference, a cultural reference to cultural memory in the city that Jed has been doing through the film festival and makers in the city have been doing a long time. But it becomes sort of a beacon, a lightning rod, because my partner's with author Jaifa, Malik Saeed, and Teaneg that you mentioned, always says with regard to black folks that were knee-deep in oil looking for gold. And I always say Baltimore is just replete with oil. I mean, we just have so much oil here. And I think, you know, having a beacon to highlight the existing beauty of the city, having a space where image makers are able to see themselves and people are able to map identity to the work that's coming out of here is really critical. Already in Baltimore, places like Six Point Films and Exit the Apple and what Margaret Rorson's doing. I mean, there's so much already happening, and now the Parkway and Jed and Zanz Foundation and lots of other places are giving us a centralized place where you can see it in sort of critical mass.
And the cultural references, of course, are sometimes very difficult. I mean, Jed mentioned, you know, the first movie to sort of become the big feature film hit is Birth of a Nation, you know, 102 years ago when this theater was formed and built. So there's a long history of cultural references. And how does this theater and the fact that the festival now has this, you know, very beautiful home, you know, advance the conversation about race, the conversation about class, the conversation about inequality, not just in the city as a whole, but in the arts community in particular?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think Maryland Film Festival is the first place I ever saw Kalika Law's films in large scale, and then maybe at 405 afterwards. And I moved here from New York, and it was sort of, you know, insane that I hadn't seen it. But I think this space, if we take advantage of the opportunities, can be a space of equity, right, if we do the right things. And I think there's always that dichotomy, the things that are most challenging, Birth of a Nation, and stressful and sort of problematic about society exist on the edge of things that are revelatory and euphoric and beautiful. And I think, you know, in this theater, my ancestors probably couldn't have sat in these seats. And I'm here talking about image making. In this city, which was sort of ground zero for American slavery, Frederick Douglass was one of the most photographed people of his time. And he mapped social change to image making and the understanding of that particular art. So again, I just think that the opportunities that the Zanz Foundation, that GBCA, that Deutsch, all of these groups in the city are trying to create for image makers. Right now, this is the year that BSA So we're talking 15, 16, 17-year-olds.
That's the Baltimore School for the Arts. They've got a new film program that's going to start. A new storytelling program. Yeah.
Because storytelling and image making combined is what we're talking about in terms of identity confirmation. And so I think that when we look at the history of, for example, John Waters, who my father, who's here, introduced me to at a way too young age.
Nice move, Dad.
he's out there. But what I think for me and for many other people who can find their tribes and their nexus through images, what that did was it said to me, it was a signal that, you know, your freak flag will be appreciated, that there's many, many tribes that exist, and that, you know, the egg lady is worthy of documentation. And so I think we all have some nexus to an egg lady or, you know, something like that in our lives. And so this gives us 365 days to program new identities, new stories.
Yeah, and Roberto Buzo Garcia, Jed referenced in our first segment the film programs at both Hopkins and MICA. You're affiliated with Hopkins, and right across the street we have the Center, which is housing some programs there. Talk about the film programs at Hopkins and as well at MICA, because these are relatively new programs that, you know, sort of coincidentally are springing up right around this beautiful building.
There's four academic programs at the center. Two undergraduate programs from Johns Hopkins and MICA have more than 20 years each. But 2 years ago, we created an MFA and an MA program at the graduate level to concentrate on the production of digital content in the 21st century.
It's not filmmaking anymore. It's digital content. Yes, it's storytelling.
That's right. You know, because story is you know, it's essential to many kinds of the ways that the film is used as art, but there are other many experiences that one can undergo without story. You know, I mean, they call it experimental, but that's also very limiting. You know, and that's one of the incredibly exciting aspects of the Parkway Theater. For us, there is an authority to the big screen that no other screen has. There is a power of bringing people together in a dark room, and you know, and having that screen weave its magic onto them. It creates a community of emotion, and now you know, we have to keep creating these spaces so that future filmmakers understand that there is a responsibility that comes with being an artist, particularly you know, when you create a space where this movies, these documentaries, visual arts are meant not only to entertain but to challenge you know, each other about you know, how we feel about the story and about ourselves.
And Jed Dietz, what's interesting, or one of the many things that's interesting to me about this moment in the history of the festival and the history of this neighborhood is that a lot of stuff has happened relatively quickly. I mean, in the last couple of years, these programs that Roberto is referring to have sprung up. And what's also really fun to think about is there's all sorts of stuff that's going to happen that you don't know anything about. I mean, because there is a serendipity and a future here that includes things. It's not like you've mapped out every step of the dance.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the whole point of this building is how much this whole art form has evolved, and you see it when you walk around this building. You're part of that history when you're in here. We have two new films coming to the festival next week that come from right out of the streets. One of them is called Whose Streets. It takes place in Ferguson, and it was shot mostly by people in Ferguson who are not film people, and then put together by a terrific filmmaker. And it's about social activism and disappointment, storytelling, and conversations, and tribes getting together. And the other one was shot here in Baltimore. It might be called experimental documentary, but it's a fabulous film called The Rat Movie. And it's shot by a wonderful young filmmaker, Theo Anthony. And that will start a conversation about something that you might think is just sort of a given, not much to think about. There's a whole lot to think about and be entertained by, actually, by that movie. So just two examples of what both Roberto and Elisa were saying.
So, Elisa, it also strikes me that when it comes to people of color in film and the community of people of color making film here in Baltimore, that there's a lot going on. Now, your film company, which is based in New York, Teaneg, is doing films. But in terms of black cinema and Baltimore's place in that map, where does that stand?
I don't know that I can speak for black cinema, but or experimental, which is probably, you know, some of how our work would be characterized. But I do think, in terms of the community of makers in Baltimore, the Parkway should be the tip of the iceberg. You know, these spaces can't do everything. Funders and our governor, if I can be political for a minute, have to really understand the importance of not just needing to work in this space. So, yes, my two partners are in L.A., but we have brilliant makers here. I don't know if I'm going to blow up their spot, should I? One of the greatest storytellers of our time, Rada Blank, is here now. Bradford Young is here now. And
Bradford Young is a cinematographer.
Yes, and not director
here,
as well.
And director. He's not here today because he's shooting a little movie called Star Wars in London.
Right. You know. And so.
And he's going to live here.
Apparently. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, give out his business. But he has a strong nexus to the city. And if you've seen Black America Again, which is a common Stevie Wonder song, Brad shot it all in Sandtown. And it was very much centered around the Freddie Gray story with Rashida Bumbray. So the reason I'm bringing them up is because a lot of us are working here, but often have to leave the city to access, whether it's, you know, production, material, or if it's, you know, personnel, though there are tremendous people working here in the city. And I think that we need to make sure that we create a space where people can live and work, right, over time. And so I think that's a big challenge for all artists, but particularly artists of color who want to live in a city that hopefully, through the work that we're doing through the task force, is an affordable city, a city that can sustain a creative class. And so when that, I think, is something that we have to sort of spend time thinking through and really effectuating change. And also, I'm hoping that things like the tax credits and that our city really, we have a, so far, really supportive mayor in terms of the arts, and that we understand how on a granular level those things affect who can live here. All the below the line folks, the gaffers, the lighting people, the people who, you know, are kind of salt of the earth of the filmmaking process that we need here, raising their families, buying products and buying houses. You know, that is really, really a critical piece in terms of makers. Color.
By the way, it is Elisa's birthday. Everybody say happy birthday, Elisa. Decided we wouldn't
Thank
break
you,
into song, but we did want to make sure that you knew that we are delighted you're having a birthday today. And so, Roberto, tell us about the particular perspective, the particular energy that young filmmakers are bringing to the programs at Micah and Hopkins, and how are they going to be interacting? We have a tweet from Susan who addresses this to Jeb, but Roberto, I think you can talk about it as well. How exactly is the festival going to help these young aspiring filmmakers and emerging filmmakers that you're working with? How are they going to help bring, you know, the media professionals and the aspiring artists together?
Well, the film festival opens the world to our students. You know, in the span of a few days, it really is like, I mean, it's an education. It's almost like an academic program unto itself. And it's not only the movies themselves, it's the filmmakers that will be here. It's the exchange of ideas, is to understand the power and effect that these movies and these experiences have on the community as well. I mean, they are part of the community, you know. And particularly in our graduate programs, we have a lot of our students hail from Baltimore. And some of the ones that come from outside of Baltimore, you know, are thinking of staying. It is an incredible time for film, television, and digital content in the city. So the energy is also there, and they bring their own ideas to the fore. And as I get older, I learn to appreciate that more. You know, I mean, we live in our own bubbles, and in an event like the festival bursts those bubbles in the best way possible.
And Jed, I mean, this notion of nurturing, cultivating young filmmakers, diverse filmmakers, filmmakers who have not been, you know, sort of put through the tube of the sort of quote-unquote normal progression in their careers, that's a big part of what you've always been about here at the Film Festival. In a world where, you know, folks can shoot movies on their phone, it also seems to me to be a world where it's no longer L.A. and New York that have to be the nexus of filmmaking.
No, that is absolutely true. I mean, we Francis Ford Coppola, the end of a great documentary about the making of Apocalypse Now, Hearts of Darkness, talked about 20 years ago, talked about what he referred to as the, you know, this girl in Cleveland waking up one morning, reaching under her bed for a camera and going out and making a movie. He had no idea. He was totally right. He had no idea how true that really was. And you can't predict, this has been true really in the history of movies, but it's even more true now, where the great filmmakers come from and exactly what their path should be. And that's the beauty of all these programs around here. Since we started construction on this building, the BSA has started the Baltimore School for the Arts, storytelling program that Mark and Pat Joseph have helped fund. The Saul Zance program that Roberto's involved with has brought several chunks of money into town for innovation in film. The Mellon has funded a youth documentary program. And that's just since we started construction. And that movement cannot be stopped.
Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. Elisa Blount-Moorhead has joined us. She's the executive director of the Station North Arts and Entertainment District. She's also a founding partner in Teaneg Studios in New York. Roberto Busa Garcia is the head of the graduate program in film studies at Johns Hopkins University. He's also a filmmaker and a consultant on independent film financing. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to a special live broadcast of Midday at the Movies from the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway here in Baltimore. The parkway opens officially on Wednesday when the 19th annual Maryland Film Festival begins. If you have a question or a comment, drop us an email at midday@wipr.org, or you can send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. We're not taking any calls today, but we are going to chat amiably with filmmaker Matt Porterfield in just a little bit. So stick around. We'll have more from the Parkway right after this quick break.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Thank you very much. If you've just joined us, it's a special edition of Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. We are delighted to be at the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway this afternoon, checking out the theater a few days before it opens officially on Wednesday for the 19th annual Maryland Film Festival. By the way, you can come to wipr.org/midday for a link to the complete schedule of the festival, which runs next Wednesday through next Sunday. Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. He's here along with Ann Hornaday, the film critic of the Washington Post. And of course, Jed and Ann usually join me on the first Thursday of the month for the Midday Movie Mayhem. And we hope you'll tune in on the first Thursday of June when we return to our, shall we say, meager accommodations at the WYPR studios. It's certainly not nearly as grand as where we are today. Our next guest has written and directed four feature films, all of which he produced here in Baltimore. He's had films shown at the Sundance Film Festival, South by Southwest, Berlin Film Festival, and of course right here at the Maryland Film Festival. Please welcome Matt Porterfield.
Thank you.
So Matt, it always drives me a little nuts, like after the Super Bowl or something, and they'll talk to the quarterback and they'll say, "How do you feel? You know, the guy just made a bonus that's, you know, more than any of us will ever make in our lives, and he's just won the Super Bowl, and he's, you know."
And he thanks God.
Yeah, he thanks God, you know. But I can't come up with anything better, man. You're a filmmaker in Baltimore. How does it feel as an artist making movies to know that the film festival has this beautiful place?
I feel really proud. It's insane. I really didn't believe this was going to come together. Just like I didn't believe, you know, I'd have offices in the Center Theater across the street, another project by Seeger Sneed. It's so beautiful here. I'm so excited to introduce filmmakers to, you know, filmmakers from all over the world to this theater, to our city. I mean, I think in the last 10 years, I've seen how excitement, sort of the national indie scene has built around the Maryland Film Festival. I'm born and raised here, so it was always a highlight of my year. But now, like, you know, people look forward to this. Like, filmmakers from all over the country, all over the world, you know, mark their calendars and are very excited about this event. And for the festival to take place here this year, I can't wait for you all to see it out in Radioland. It's going to blow your mind.
Yeah. And the fact that there will be not just next weekend, all of the events there, but, you know, a consistent array of films that you're not going to be able to see other places. I mean, that's a huge boost for a person in your business.
Yeah, I mean, we have the Charles Theater and the repertory program as well as their calendar year. And of course, the Maryland Film Festival is once a year an opportunity to see films that you might not otherwise see here in Baltimore. But a lot of times I'm going up to New York for various festivals and programs that don't make it down here. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the Maryland Film Festival, with a little help from Hopkins and Micah and guest curators from the area, can bring here. I think it's going to be a game changer.
And Anne Hornaday, I don't want to have the program end without talking a little bit about this year's festival. Are there particular filmmakers you're very excited about seeing? Are there particular movies you're excited about seeing? Are there particular things about this year and this festival that stand out to you as sort of, you know, can't miss stuff?
Well, I'm always excited for the opening night for the shorts program, because that's just always it's just always a great night, and to have that here is going to be, just like Matt said, I just can't wait. It's just going to be spectacular. There are some really wonderful documentaries. The Rat movie I have not been able to see yet, and I am fascinated by that project. There are two really wonderful films. One called I Am Another You. You're getting that, right? Is that one of yours? Sorry, I don't have the program. It caught me a little flat. Is that not playing? Never mind.
Sure.
Are you getting Mainland?
Mainland.
Yeah, Mainland, which is about a group of Chinese exchange students who come to a boarding school in Maine. And it is, you know, just even that synopsis sort of makes you think you know what that story is going to look like and how it's going to unfold. And it isn't what you think. And it gives such a different perspective, especially on China. It's just a really candid glimpse into Chinese culture that I strongly recommend people see. So, no, it's always a great program.
I can mention a couple others that are people ought to be at least thinking about. It always depends on your own taste. But we have two world premieres in this year's festival, a film called Princess Sid, from a self-taught filmmaker in Chicago named Steve Cohn, and Dr. Brinks and Dr. Brinks. And one of our films, Life After Love, just won a big award at Tribeca and will come here for its next screening. So there, you'll see, I will tell you a thing that's very exciting to us is next Thursday at 4:00, the first feature film after the shorts program opening night in this theater will be Barry Levinson's newest movie called The Wizard of Lies, about Bernie Madoff, starring Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer. He will be here. So the first film we ever showed in 1999 was his documentary, and his film now will open the new Parkway.
That's terrific. I love that. Love that. But we've gotten a number of people tweeting and emailing asking, who is Stavros Niarchos? I'm desolate to have to admit that he is not my uncle. But
who
is he?
We would all like to be related, I know. He was a great shipping magnate, a contemporary and a great competitor for many things with of Aristotle Onassis. His fortune is cared for now by this foundation, presided over by Andreas Drakopoulos, who was a great nephew, who has been in this building a number of times from very early stages. And Andreas sits on the Hopkins board and is a great philanthropist. They just built a cultural center designed by Renzo Piano in Athens that they fully funded themselves. So it's a major foundation that participates all over the world. They've done a lot of cultural giving in places like Athens and New York. It's a great treat to have a really significant gift from them here in Baltimore.
Matt Porterfield, I want to ask you, I've asked our film critic, our esteemed film critic, as a filmmaker, are there particular movies you're looking forward to next weekend?
Yes, very much. I've got my calendar all put together. I'm looking forward to the strong showing of local films, Theo Anthony's Rat film, Ramona Diaz's Motherland, really excited about Albert Burney's new feature. And then in the Diverging Forms short program, we have Jimmy Joe Roche, Karen Jasinski, Meredith Moore. I think Alan Resnick has a film, as well as two Micah grads, Tarek Turkey and Corey Hughes. But for me, having been lucky enough to travel a little bit with my own films and meet filmmakers from all over the world, I'm particularly excited about the strong showing from Argentina. This year we have The Human Surge, probably my favorite film of 2016, though not an easy one. That screening here, very excited about that, as well as Matias Pinheiro's Hermia and Helena. And then I'm presenting a film that I co-wrote and co-produced in Buenos Aires by Gaston Solniki on Friday and Sunday. Very excited about that one as well.
And Anne Hornaday, when young filmmakers have their, or old filmmakers for that matter, have their work shown at a place like Maryland Film Festival. You mentioned about the camaraderie, you mentioned about how good the festival treats them. Mm-hmm. How does the business treat them afterwards? Because the Maryland Film Festival is a little different than Sundance, which seems to be a bit of a, you know, a wheeler-dealer place, you know, who's going to distribute this movie, mm-hmm. who's going to... The Maryland Film Festival, the focus is not necessarily on that, although sometimes distribution deals happen. But mm-hmm. but what is the boost that a filmmaker gets from screening here?
Well, Matt and Roberto and Jed could probably speak to that a little bit more specifically, but from my point of view, like you said, it's not a market festival. You know, different festivals have different DNA and different missions, and this is very much a community festival geared toward serving filmmakers and audiences and putting them together. And, you know, there might have been a time when that would have been very nice and that would have been all. But now, it's more and more incumbent on young, emerging filmmakers to sort of have a community of supporters and have an audience that they bring with them. Generally, that's measured, the metric for that is your Twitter following or your, you know, how many people you can reach out to who support your work and enjoy your work. And that is social capital for them. And that's a value and a deliverable that they bring to whatever deals and business deals that they might make. So it really matters, you know, that they connect with an audience here in this room, and that if that audience enjoys their film, that they bond. And that will, I think, serve them into their future careers.
And Jed, given the fact that movies in general in the last couple of years have had, at least the big Hollywood movies, have had a bit of a dip. I mean, you know, the revenues are up because the tickets are more expensive, but, they're, you know, between video games and other opportunities that people have. Talk about the trepidation that I think all of us can understand that Buzzy Cusack and his daughter Kathleen, who run the Charles Theater, and to whom we owe a great debt in this town because Indeed. They saved the Senator Theater, they renovated the Charles. They have some trepidation about the competition that is now a block away from their theater.
Well, I wouldn't use the word competition. I guess I would use the word we're creating a film corridor here. There are a couple pieces already in place, the first of which was the expanded Charles, and the next piece that came in devoted to film was the Hopkins and Micah deciding to move their film departments here. And we will add to that now. We're a not-for-profit, so we don't have to live completely off of our earned revenue. And the kind of programming we will do here probably has to come from a not-for-profit because it will be these, you know, movies that have been chronicled over and over and over again that are not coming to Baltimore. And that will be a very additive to this corridor and to our city.
And Matt, as a filmmaker and a teacher of filmmaking, is access to those movies difficult? I mean, one would think in this day and age of, you know, the internet that finding a film is not all that hard. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but is access to some of the movies that Jed's going to be able to bring here an issue for young folks?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff out there you simply can't find. And it's more than a question of access, or rather, it's a question of how you access. I mean, there are some films that I'm only able to find links to, and I'll watch on my computer or my device. But I make movies first and foremost for the cinema. And I go to the cinema because I want to get lit. I want to have an out-of-body experience, right? I want to dream. And I connect with a piece of work, cinematic work, in the proscenium a lot different than I do when I'm, like, watching it on my laptop. It's the difference between, like, having a Bud Light, right, and, like, tripping on mushrooms. When people come to the Parkway, this is the magic mushrooms right here.
And just there's exactly what would that difference be, Matt?
There's your bumper sticker.
And how do you know?
I have no idea. My students told me.
You know, and when you talk about your new book is going to be all about this, about how to watch a movie. Mm. It's important to watch a movie with other people.
I think
the community of watching the movie. And of course, as a musician, the community of hearing a concert live is really important.
It's really true. I mean, we all know that. And as Matt said, it really is it's a unique experience to sit in the dark and enter kind of a collective dream state. And it's also a unique experience to be experiencing something collectively and deeply personally. And so just that theatrical communal experience enhances that. I just lost my train of thought because I was so entranced by all of you.
Well, we are entranced by being in this building and entranced by having you here.
Well,
thank you so much,
kind.
Ann Hornaday. Matt Porterfield, thank you. And Jed Dietz, this really is a transformative moment in our city. And we appreciate the determination, the tenacity, and the inspiration that you have invested in this to make this happen. Jed Dietz, ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Maryland Film Festival. All right, that'll do it for us today. We want to thank the staff of the Maryland Film Festival for helping us out this afternoon. Evan Rogers, Greg Galinsky, Brian Denny, Adrian Perez, Mary Helen Shaughnessy, and Jessica Baruti. Thanks to our team at WIPR, Ray Heppner, Carolyn Jewell, Carol Maddow, and Susan Warren. Thanks to our midday team, Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong, Kathleen Cahill, and Matt Taka. And special thanks to our director and engineer up there in the booth, the fabulous Luke Spicknall. Thanks also to our terrific audience here at the Parkway and our volunteers who helped us out. And thanks to all of our guests this afternoon. The Maryland Film Festival launches on Wednesday night with a special presentation of short films. It continues throughout the weekend. You gotta come and see this great theater. You gotta check out some great movies. And we've got a link to the complete schedule. Come on over to wipr.org/midday. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Thank you for checking us out online. Midday, of course, we'll be back with you on Monday and every day, Monday through Friday, from noon to one. From the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy the festival and have a great weekend.